I'm Celeste Headlee, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It is time for our weekly visit to the barbershop. The guys are going to talk about what's in the news, what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, writer and culture critic Jamie Israel. He joins us from Cleveland. In Chicago, Arsalan Iftikhar, senior editor of the Islamic Monthly, founder of themuslimguy.com. Neil Minkoff is a healthcare consultant and contributor to National Review magazine. He joins us from Boston. And Michael Steele is the former chair of the Republican National Committee and a columnist for The Griot. He joins me right here in our Washington, D.C. studio. So, Jimmy, take it away.
Thanks. Hey, everybody. How we doing? Up, welcome
Jimmy?
To the shop.
You're good. We're good.
Hey, doing what's good.
The Man of Steel, where you been? Off saving the world? Good
hey,
to see
baby,
you, man.
We've just been plowing through it all,
what's up,
you know?
Yeah, man. I know you've been out there fighting crime.
Just trying to work through crazy. That's it.
Right. Well, when you figure out how to do that, why don't you bottle it? Why don't you bottle it when we're going to Home Shopping Network and sell it? Okay, hey. All right, anyway, let's get things started. It's a battle of the budget, and you know how much I love a good battle. Time is short, and the deadline for a government shutdown is nigh. Isn't that right, Celeste?
That is correct. The Affordable Care Act is kind of at the center of this standoff. House Republicans are trying to block funding for Obamacare, and the Democrats are pressing them to just drop that. If there's no solution, though, the government could shut down by midnight on Monday night.
Wow. Thanks for that, Celeste. Michael Steele.
Yeah.
You having those flashbacks, those 90s flashbacks?
I have a 90s flashback.
So what's the difference this time, if any?
The difference this time is that there is a great deal more vitriol around the idea of solving the problem and falling into political partisan positions and refusing to move from them is very difficult right now for either side to get any gains moving in trying to solve the problem of the debt, as well as addressing legitimate concerns about the Health Care Act. I mean, you know, you can't take that off the table and say there aren't issues there, as the polls and those who are implementing this have revealed. But I do think kind of linking the two at this point is more problematic, particularly in the face of shutting down the government, which has an impact on people who are just literally innocent bystanders here. Those who get monthly checks, our veterans, our seniors, those in hospitals who need medicines and other forms of care. So there's a real problem, I think, that the GOP is confronting, and not too well, I might say, in terms of addressing these issues that could blow back in a way that, quite frankly, going into next year will put them in a hole unlike any they've seen in a while, because on top of Hispanics being ticked off about the lack of effort on immigration, African-Americans ticked off about the state of the voting rights laws in this country, you now have the rest of us ticked off. It's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Neil, you know, man, you might have to put on the cape and cowl and go up to Capitol Hill and, you know, give them some of that Jungian love, man. I mean, because they can't figure it out on their own, you know. But a lot of us, a lot of people are still trying to figure this out. And really, you know, this might affect them. Do you care if there's a shutdown, bro?
Well, I mean, I have to care that there's a shutdown. We all have friends and relatives and colleagues and people, neighbors that depend on the kind of things that our colleague was just talking about, you know, the checks that are coming in, the people, simple things like processing those. There are about 7,000 to 10,000 people every day who are aging into Medicare and Social Security. Nobody's going to process those. That's going to be a giant backlog. We need to make sure that people can come to the country, leave the country with visas and passports and all that kind of thing, just to keep the economy going. So we have to care, but we also have to make sure that people have some perspective around what really is at risk and what really isn't at risk, because, you know, look at the giant fuss about the sequester, and so far it's been more of a whimper than a bang.
Although I should point out that if there is a shutdown, the National Zoo turns off the panda cam.
I love the panda cam. Seriously, my kids and I love the panda cam.
You know,
did we have to save it, right?
First the White House tours, now this? Come on.
I know, right?
Jeez.
Listen, you know, I look at this as kind of a failure of our president. I think he did a poor job at the start explaining this and kind of drawing it out. I know this is a very emotional issue, medical care, because of the things he went through with his mom. And I think he went into it thinking, well, medical care for everybody. I mean, that's like a no-brainer, but it's not a no-brainer. And I think it's just made a lot of people nervous, including people that hold office. And I think if there is a shutdown, I think it's going to be a failure of leadership and a failure of government. But Arsalan, we know that stuff like that never happens, right?
Yeah, I know, right? And what's interesting to me, I mean, this, to me, it seems as though, you know, when you're making Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, the central tenet of your, you know, platform here, it's essentially being sore losers. You know, you have a law that has passed both in the House and in the Senate and then was considered constitutional by the Supreme Court in June 2012 in a decision written by, wait for it, conservative Chief Justice John Roberts. And so, you know, it's gone as a piece, you know, the whole, you know, schoolhouse rock of how a bill becomes a law. This thing is law. And to use this to sort of, you know, hang the economy, as White House spokesperson Jay Carney said, you know, elected officials in Congress are not elected to tank the economy.
Well,
and I think that's what
they're
doing.
I think if he had given it a schoolhouse rock approach in terms of how he explained it, I think he would have quelled a lot of people's concerns. I mean, I don't know. Michael
Steele,
you feel me on that?
That's a good suggestion. Let's talk about some of the elected officials, because there's squabbling going on, Jimmy, and there are strong words being thrown back and forth, right?
Yeah. I mean, wacko bird, right? I mean, that's what Arizona Senator John McCain has called Texas Senator Ted Cruz, and that was before Cruz made a 21-hour speech to support House Republicans who want to stop Obamacare. With friends like that, wow, who needs enemies? Here's some of that. Drop that tape.
That Sam I am, that Sam I am. I do not like that Sam I am. Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam I am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
Alrighty then.
That's not Dr. Seuss. We should point out that is Ted Cruz.
Seuss, that's Ted Cruz.
Thank you for that, C. Listen, Neil Minkoff, what was that? Do you see Cruz as a political superstar or as McCain opined, a wacko bird?
Well, first of all, I think you can be both. I'm not sure that it's an either or, but I'll tell you this, which is, I mean, you know, you mentioned every time I do this, I'm a healthcare consultant. I go all over the country and I talk about healthcare reform, and it's literally my business to know what it means for a lot of different people. And I would say that throughout the South, the Southwest, the middle of the country, there are a ton of people who are scared and worried about what this means to them or their families or their healthcare or their jobs. And they are delighted that somebody got up and fought for them, even if it was futile and looked stupid.
Yeah,
right.
That's the piece that I think a lot of folks, particularly in Washington, seem to miss, is that Ted Cruz is not playing to, you know, that audience of senators and congressmen and insiders.
Right.
He's talking to a broader constituency, many of whom elected him to the United States Senate in Texas with the sole purpose of coming here and stopping the spending and the growth of government. So I think, you know, the way he's done this, I think, has been a little bit more showboaty and ham-handed. As the president has kind of stood on the sidelines and let this thing kind of bubble this way, you have folks on the other side who just overplayed their hands to the point where both parties, in my view, look ridiculous. Because in the end, at the end of the day,
what a shock!
Exactly. At the end of the day, see, it's just a matter of getting it done, because that's why you were sent here, to solve the problems, not to get to these cliffs and these artificial moments and pretend that you're doing something.
You are listening to our weekly Barbershop Roundtable. We are joined by Michael Steele. You just heard former chair of the RNC, also called culture critic Jimmy Israel, commentator Arsalan Iftikhar, and contributor to the National Review, Neil Minkoff. Back to you, Jimmy.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that, Celeste. All right. So let me see if I can descend from greatness for a moment to continue talking with you all. And that's right. I'm channeling a little Kanye West. You know. Right. As it turns out, I don't know how you do this, but he has beef with late night host Jimmy Kimmel, and it's ugly, Celeste.
Yeah, just so you know, Kanye West did a BBC One interview, and he talked about how great he is, not just musically, but just in general. He also apparently came up with a fashion idea for leather jogging pants, which is the worst idea ever. Kimmel mocked that interview on his show because he had kids recreate it word for word. Take a listen.
Bought the leather jogging pants 6 years ago to Fendi, and they said no! How many have you done seen with leather jogging pants? Where's the culture at? Where is the culture at?
Yeah, so?
We culture! Rap is new rock and roll! We're the rock stars, and I'm the biggest of all of them!
Wow, thanks for that. Well, so as it turns out, you know, Kanye, he's self-conscious, but in a bad way. He didn't really appreciate the video. He blasted Kimmel via Twitter. most words that he used are probably not appropriate for radio. You know, but my thing about Kanye has always been, you got to know Kanye's story. I mean, Kanye's kind of earned a lot of this hubris. You may not believe it, but he kind of has. And he's eccentric, but he's brilliant. And I think I ride with him. You know, and I don't know, maybe that's just me. A-Train, you're from around the Windy City, Chicago. Kanye's stomping grounds. You know, are you wearing leather jogging pants, bro?
Well, first of all, Jimmy, I'm going to let you finish, but Beyonce had one of the best music videos of all time.
Oh,
of all
period.
Time.
That was bad. Period. Come on now.
Now, in the 6-year history of Barbershop, I don't think anybody has won more ridiculous awards than Kanye West, and he wins it again this week by, you know, taking on Jimmy Kimmel in that brilliant, brilliant spoof of the kid doing the interview with the BBC One. When it comes to Team Kanye and Team Kimmel, I'm always going to be on Team Kimmel.
And again, wow. let's double down on that. If you're Kanye West, you don't want to go up against a guy who's on television every night talking to millions of people who Word. Can make you a joke every single night. So he needs to back that down, check his stuff, check his hubris, because Kimmel will wipe the floor with him.
Well, hey, Jimmy,
No, I'm with you and Team Kanye on this one. The guy is fantastic. His beef makes life interesting. His music is creative. And clearly the only thing we've learned is that Jimmy Kimmel doesn't care about black people.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. He's kind of the Basquiat.
Opinions expressed here are not the opinions of National Public Radio.
He's kind of the Basquiat of the hip-hop culture. You know, and I really admire that. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, it just seems like
I admire it, too. But, I mean, there's a bright line that
you take
the joke and you move on. I mean, his response to show he is the better man would have been to laugh at himself along with the joke. I mean, come on. Leather shorts? Come on.
No. Pants, yeah, pants. But Jimmy, that's not the only beef we've got going here. There's also Team Durant and Team Wade.
Yeah, apparently they had words on social media about Durant suggesting Wade didn't belong on Sports Illustrated's top NBA player list.
We're talking about Kevin Durant of the Oklahoma City Thunder and then the Miami Heat's Dwayne Wade.
A-Train, do you really think this is for real, or do they just both need a hug?
I think it was for real by accident. And if you watch the Kevin Durant interview where he's asked about, you know, the Sports Illustrated top 10 list, he wanted to make a point that his former teammate James Harden, who's now in the Houston Rockets, should have been on the list. And then the host asked him, well, who should have been taken off? And he said D. Wade. And right when he said that, you could tell he in his head was like, oh, snap, I shouldn't have said that. Because they both, as you know, Kevin Durant and D. Wade were both in a Gatorade commercial together where they both dream about playing each other. And what I like about it is that it's sort of a throwback to old school NBA beefs. You know, now everybody's like kissing and hugging before the game. You know, back when we were growing up in the 80s, it was Larry Bird telling Patrick Ewing, I'm going to drop a dime from this point on the court, and then he did it. And so I like the throwback to the old school NBA basketball here.
All right.
None of that kissing and hugging, you guys.
I think they both just need to come into the barbershop and just take a chill pill with the rest of us. You know what I'm saying? Let's work it out here at the shop, fellas. Come on.
Truth.
Spoken like a true RNC chairman. A RNC chairman. Neil, you know, Durant said that Houston Rockets' James Harden should, you know, he said the Wade should have had the spot. Who do you think should have had the spot, bro?
I would give it to Harden over Wade a little bit, but I thought that the interesting thing wasn't so much the minor beef between Durant and Wade as the fact that Durant was kind of publicly saying, I wish Harden were still here, and my God, how could they have traded him? And that's the reason we don't have a ring, and D-Wade has three, and I don't have one. I thought that was the interesting part.
Well, before we move away from sports completely, we may see King James or the truth on the backs of some NBA jerseys. You guys probably all heard this again. Reportedly, the NBA has given permission for both the Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets to put nicknames on the jerseys instead of their actual real names during their matchups. Michael Stilardi over here shaking his head. But Jimmy, let me get a response from you. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, the wait staff at Applebee's, they put their nicknames on their nameplates. So, I mean, why not?
How many people are watching footage of that, Jimmy?
I mean, well, hey, I mean, if you don't want to be taken seriously, I mean, then you put Pookie on your nameplate or on your back. But seriously, if you were at the job,
and there go Pookie
job,
for the layup.
Listen, I don't want to be waited on by Pookie. But at any rate, you know, if you're at the job, no matter what it is that you do, please use your government name. Seriously, bro.
Jimmy, this is our salon. You know, as a diehard Boston Celtics fan, I would have been the first person to go out and buy a Boston Celtics Jesus Shuttle's worth KG or the Truth jersey. The fact that they're going to be on the back of Brooklyn Nets jerseys makes me vomit in my mouth.
Neil Minkoff, what about you? You are in.
I think I'm in, but let's make it like All-Star and let the fans vote on what the nickname should be. So you get the Cleveland fans to jump en masse on the internet, and all of a sudden LeBron James is playing with Traitor 6 on his
back. I don't even want to see what they'd give to A-Rod if we moved to baseball.
But that would be entertaining.
That could be great. Michael Steele, you're not on board.
No, I'm not on board. I think this is bogus, crazy nonsense. And, you know, the NBA is trying to bring some excitement. The excitement is not on your back. It's what you do on the court. So, you know.
Maybe I'll get an NPR jersey that says Divalicious on the back.
Divalicious.
Anyway, we'll have to end the barbershop there with that very feminine comment. Michael Steele, you just heard, former chair of the Republican National Committee and columnist for The Griot. Join me here in our D.C. studios. Neil Minkoff, healthcare consultant, contributor to The National Review. Join us from NPR member station WGBH in Boston. Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuide.com. He's also senior editor for Islamic Monthly. Arsalan joined us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Jimmy Israel, writer and culture critic. He's also adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College, and he joined us from NPR member station WCPN in Cleveland. Jimmy, what would your nickname be?
That dude.
That dude. I'd like to see that on a jersey. Thanks to all of you.
Mine would be Pookie.
Yep.
Pookie Steele.
Remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, you can look for us for the Barbershop Podcast. That's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. And that is our program for today and for the week. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. We'll talk more on Monday.